From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
For our last podcast of the year, we're talking with Treasurer Josh Frydenberg, who has just delivered a budget update with much more positive figures than were expected only a few months ago. However, the economy still has a long road to recovery. Unemployment is at 6.8%, and the projected budget deficit remains massive, nearly $200 billion, even if not as large as the budget forecast. 2021 will be a testing year, albeit not as bad as 2020. Josh Frydenberg, can you give us a brief snapshot of the outlook for next year?
Well, today's budget update shows that unemployment will be lower, GDP growth will be higher, and the budget bottom line has improved from what was forecast at budget time just 10 weeks ago. When it comes to unemployment, it was the expectation at budget time that it would peak at around 8%. The new peak, according to Treasury, is at 7.5% in the March quarter, and then it will decrease to 7.25% by June and eventually get to 5.25% by mid-2024, bearing in mind that when we entered this crisis in February of this year, unemployment had fallen to 5.1%.
So what changed between the October budget forecasts and now?
Particularly strong growth in the labour market, and we saw today the new unemployment numbers, where the unemployment rate fell from 7% down to 6.8%, 90,000 new jobs being created, 84,000 of those being full-time, and particularly strong employment growth in Victoria as that state, representing a quarter of the national economy, comes out of lockdown. We still see the unemployment levels for younger people continue to be challenging and continue to be too high. That's why we've put in place the JobMaker hiring credit to get young people off the unemployment queues and into work. But what has driven these better numbers today is the easing of the restrictions, the successful suppression of the virus, and of course, the unprecedented levels, Michelle, of economic support that's come from the federal government, that's now coming from the state governments, and all of that is contributing to economic activity.
Just on this question of young people, the employment numbers for middle-aged workers seem to be quite good. Why do you think the young people are having more trouble getting back into work?
Well, if you look at the sectors that were hit hardest very early on, sectors like recreation, hospitality, sport, tourism, these are sectors, accommodation, where many young people are employed, and a number of those are part-time workers as well. So I think it was a reflection of the nature of the economic hit that came in the early stages of COVID-19. JobKeeper has been, though, remarkable in keeping employers and employees connected, and that formal connection with the payments that we have provided has ensured that those people have a job on the other side of the crisis when the restrictions are eased, the pub doors are opening, the people are back at the gyms, the cafes are serving their customers. All of that is occurring, often with the same staff that were in place before this crisis, but who have been kept in place because of JobKeeper through this crisis.
At your news conference today, when you presented this upbeat picture for 2021, you also mentioned that there were some risks on the downside. What are those?
Well, globally, we're seeing a number of cases with second and third waves, and we're also seeing lockdowns as a result. So the risk to the Australian economy is the same as the risk to the global economy, namely a failure to suppress the virus. That being said, there are positive signs, positive early signs with the vaccine development, and the rollout of the vaccine will hopefully mitigate those risks. There's obviously global trade tensions, and Australia is having trade tensions with China as well, and that impacts upon our economy and our ability to access the Chinese market, although we are really focusing as well on diversifying our markets for Australian exporters. And then there's just the level of uncertainty across the community more generally. And what we've seen throughout this crisis so far, Michelle, is because of that economic uncertainty, households are saving more than ever before. And when they save more, they don't spend it. And that reduction in household consumption has impacted upon the national economy. That being said, restrictions are eased, people are getting back to work, and consumption has picked up a bit.
Now, can you just drill down on the likely effects of China's trade action against Australia? Because this hasn't shown up yet in the macro figures, has it? A number of sectors, industries are being affected, but overall, I think our trade has fallen only very marginally. So how do you think this is going to pan out over the next few months?
Well, Michelle, the largest export for Australia to China is, of course, iron ore. And the iron ore price is elevated at the current time at around $150. We've taken a prudent assumption in the budget of iron ore falling to around $55 by the September quarter next year. But the dynamic in the iron ore market is very much a reflection of supply and demand. And there are limited options for China when it comes to alternative supplies to Australia. One option is Brazil, but they have had issues with their supply and they had some tragedies in their industry as well. And there is new investment going into Guinea, but that will take some years to provide the benefit of that investment. So we've seen the iron ore price being elevated, and that's obviously been good news for Australian exporters. But when it comes to other products, including agricultural products, Australian exporters have options other than China. We've focused very much on opening new markets, be they markets in Asia, be they markets more further afield. And the Australian Trade Department and Austrade are very much working on opening up new markets for Australian exporters as they face some current challenges with China.
Now, businesses are moving off JobKeeper faster than anticipated, but do you think that the January step down to a lower level of that scheme will have a negative impact? And also, you were saying today JobKeeper will definitely come to an end in late March. Are you absolutely set on that?
That is the plan. And we've always said throughout this crisis that these unprecedentedly large wage subsidies, namely a $90 billion program with JobKeeper, was always temporary, was always targeted, was always going to use existing systems, scalable, proportionate to the challenge we faced. But it was coming to an end. And it's coming to an end as the economy recovers. And Michelle, today there are 2 million fewer Australians on JobKeeper in the month of October than compared to the month prior in September. And there are other supports that we're providing to the economy. The Home Builder Program extension, the JobMaker Hiring Credit, the Business Investment Incentives, the tax cuts, the wage subsidies for apprenticeships, the bring forward of infrastructure programs. All of those initiatives are designed to boost our economy as it transitions through the recovery and off programs such as JobKeeper.
What do we know about what happens to people when they go off JobKeeper, which attaches them to their original businesses through this crisis? Do they stay in those jobs?
Well, what we have seen is a large number of people stay in those jobs that they had going into the crisis, and JobKeeper has helped them do that. But there will be some restructuring. There will be some businesses that don't make it through this crisis, just as there will be some workers who lose their job through this crisis. And we are doing everything we can to provide the opportunities to businesses to trade through these challenges, to get to the other side and to keep their staff employed.
Now, you've said previously that you will give priority to repairing the economy over repairing the budget until unemployment is, quote, comfortably, unquote, below 6%. Today, you've defined what's comfortable as 5.25%, 5.5%. When do you anticipate those sorts of levels being reached?
Well, in today's update, we said unemployment was likely to reach 5.25% by mid-2024.
That's a long time away.
It is. That being said, we have faced the biggest economic shock since the Great Depression, and it does, the economy does continue to require this support that we've provided to date. Some $251 billion of economic support has been committed by the Morrison government, but $138 billion of that has already gone out the door to households and to businesses.
How many years before the economy returns to its pre-pandemic levels, do you think?
It's going to take some time. And again, I take you to that key indicator of unemployment. Unemployment was 5.1% in February of this year. It's now 6.8%. The expectation it gets back to 5.25% by mid-2024. And we've seen in the September quarter our economy around 3.8% smaller than it was going into the crisis. These are the challenges we face, but 3.3% growth in September was the biggest quarterly jump since 1976.
It will be a very long time indeed until the budget gets back into the black. The Parliamentary Budget Office says it certainly won't be this decade. Is that okay?
Well, again, the context is critical. We have faced a huge economic shock. It's required an unprecedented level of spending. Our spending has been targeted and designed to support jobs, people staying in jobs, but also creating new jobs for those out of work to move into. So we understand the challenge. We've put in place our response, and together with the states and together with Australians, we can get to the other side and be stronger for it.
So keeping the budget in the red for years and years, you think is sustainable?
Well, there will be a very challenging fiscal environment for years out of this crisis. No one's made any secret of that, Michelle. But again, the context is critical. We don't want to spend a dollar that we don't have to. But the money that we have spent has been designed to make our economy stronger and has been designed to boost the recovery, which we now see underway. The Australian economy doesn't run on autopilot. You have to take very conscious decisions, as we have through this crisis, to get Australians, households and Australian businesses to the other side. What we can now see from various economic data points that the recovery is underway. Consumer and business confidence is up. Economic growth is up. The unemployment rate has come down, and we are seeing investment being encouraged by the incentives we've put in place.
We're obviously going to end up with a somewhat differently structured economy post-COVID. How different do you think it will be, and how do you see in broad terms some of this restructuring?
I think you're right. There will be some significant structural changes in the economy. First, we've seen an acceleration of the adaptation and adoption of new technology, whether it's telehealth, whether it's virtual AGMs, electronic signatures, the Zoom meeting replacing the aeroplane travel would have normally occurred for someone to get across the country to undertake a meeting. That acceleration has been rapid through this process, and there's no turning that back. And so I think that will change the nature of work. More people, I think, will work from home. More people will move to the regions. I think the regions will come out of this crisis stronger. And we're already starting to see increases in house prices in regional Australia, some parts of regional Australia. I think there'll be a focus on global supply chains. I don't think countries will want to leave it to chance, their ability to be able to access and secure vital goods, whether that is masks or ventilators. They will want to have some sort of domestic manufacturing capacity in certain areas, which will be vital in a crisis. So whether it's technology, whether it's the regions, whether it's the global supply chains, or even indeed whether it's our CBDs who will come under a bit of pressure, certainly in the near term, I think there will be some changes out of this crisis.
And do you think on balance those will be positive? You mentioned the central business districts. That will be, in many cases, a negative for some businesses.
Well, there will need to be adaptation by certain sectors across the economy, and indeed by certain places like CBDs. They'll have to adapt to this new world. I'm sure they will, and I'm sure they'll do it successfully. But that's not to say the change will not happen. I think it will. And how people, whether it's families or businesses, adapt to those changes will very much determine how successful they are going forward.
Treasury advice was very important in working out how to sustain as many businesses and workers as possible through the crisis. And the advice of health officials has been crucial in minimising Australian deaths. Do you think this experience will bring in a new respect for experts?
I think you're absolutely right that through this crisis, there was an appreciation and an acceptance of the advice that was coming from our medical experts. And you saw that in the daily press conferences where they appeared side by side with the health minister, with the prime minister and with others. And the way the health officers, the chief health officers, worked across state boundaries and indeed across political boundaries in the best interest of the nation was very important. So I don't know what the next challenge will be and whose advice will be required, but it is fair to say that the medical advice, which was accepted by the government, has served this country very well.
And the economic advice from Treasury?
Absolutely. I want to pay real credit to the team at Treasury. They were outstanding, obviously led by my secretary, Stephen Kennedy, Jenny Wilkinson as a deputy secretary, and many others in that department went beyond their call and really worked not only diligently but very effectively, and the tax office as well, as they were administering massive programs like JobKeeper, which they have done and done well, and that has meant that many hundreds of thousands of jobs have been saved, and Australia is better placed than nearly any other nation in the world to come out stronger on the other side of COVID-19.
Did you ever feel in these last months that it wasn't going to be like this, that we were really going to be in an incredibly black hole on the health and the economic front?
Well, very early on it was very uncertain, and many of us feared the worst, and when I mean the worst, the damage to the economy, but also the number of COVID cases and subsequent deaths. Treasury told me early on in the pandemic that the unemployment rate could reach 10% and but for JobKeeper reach 15%. That's a very different world to the one that you and I face today, with the unemployment rate falling to 6.8%. So programs like JobKeeper, the cash flow boost, the JobSeeker coronavirus supplement, the $750 payments and now $250 payments to pensioners and to carers and others on income support have very much helped pull Australia through this challenging time. And Australians go into Christmas, Michelle, with real cause for optimism and hope. We're not out of it. We don't know what's around the corner. And we know the road ahead will be hard. But there is genuine cause for optimism and hope.
Josh Frydenberg, thank you very much for talking with us on a busy day.
All the best to your listeners. Merry Christmas and the very best for the festive season.
And that's our last podcast for the year. Thank you to my producer, Tom Glassie. We'll be back with more interviews in 2021. Goodbye for now and have a very happy Christmas and a good new year.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.